never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to Skanon Podcast number 59.
I've got no jokes. How about you guys?
No.
So let's move on.
Yes, so we're all back here. We got Jason back.
Yes, fresh from the sanatorium.
They finally let him out.
Yes, I'm finally back.
He's been let into the supervised care of Darren, so...
Hello.
Thank you, Darren.
Here to observe. Don't engage directly.
He's my sponsor.
We're getting there, Jay. We're getting there.
If you acknowledge the existence, you give him the power.
Jesus, okay. Let's take it a turn.
Since it's been so long, Jason, what have you watched?
67 movies. I'll go through them alphabetically.
He's not kidding.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that. Well, there's a couple that are in the top 10, so we'll talk about them when they come along. But I do want to mention Song of the Sea, because I did see that. Philip, I know you're not a massive fan.
I'm not.
I really, really liked it. And I just thought, damn it, it should be doing better business and bigger business, but it's not. But what, 100,000? Is that what we're talking? It's scratched up to?
No, it's over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, is that bad? I mean, what would you expect? Would you expect more proper animation?
If they had handled the release better, they could have expected more.
And I think also the prestige as well. I assume they expected it to be like the...
Why wasn't it gala at Dublin though?
Yeah.
At JDIF.
We're still asking for that. We don't know.
And the day before release.
Yes.
Hmm. Right between Minions and Inside Out.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. There.
But I loved it as a meditation on kind of myth, loss, all that kind of stuff. And like, I thought it was terrific. And the animation, I thought, was absolutely stunning. And one of the best kind of representations on screen of Ireland I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah,
visually, I think it's actually beautiful.
200,000.
Oh, okay. That doesn't sound as bad. But I like that.
It's level with Jupiter Ascending.
Cost a little less than Jupiter Ascending.
Doesn't even have Channing Tatum as like the love child of Spock and Thor. I mean, you know.
I'm not late, but I tried to watch Jupiter Ascending. We got about
you 40
minutes. 40 minutes in. So, well done, Song of the Sea. In that regard.
Got through at least twice as much
really
of you.
Terrible. But I loved it, so. That will be bought when it comes out. I think it's excellent. A good 4 stars. A good, solid, strong 4 stars for me. What else? Rewatch of The Truman Show.
Masterpiece.
Because it is really a masterpiece. From a still underrated director.
Peter Weir.
Isn't he? A little bit?
I think the reason for that is he doesn't make films very often.
No, he doesn't.
And when he does, he makes Master and Commander, which is awesome.
It's great. It's really great.
Terrific. But there's an underrated Peter Weir.
Yes.
When you look through the CV, you realise just how good it is.
Yeah.
And if he just maybe ups the work rate, not like Woody Allen levels, but just look at the stuff. Picnic at Hanging Rock, Dead Poets Society, The Truman Show, Master and Commander.
Fearless.
Gallipoli.
Fearless.
Dead Poets Society.
Yeah. I haven't seen The Way Back, curiously.
I've heard it's okay.
It's not great.
I'd heard that, and it kind of put me off, and I was like, God damn it, it's Peter Weir film, it shouldn't be put
off.
The Way
Back is one with Ed Harris and Colin Farrell. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's solid. It's, you know.
Hey,
it wouldn't be up
his
there.
Solid would probably be better than most people's good.
Yeah, but he made it's Green Card as well, and I'm like,
Green Card's not. Green Card's light enough. It's okay. It's inoffensive.
It's got an Academy Award nomination, Green Card. Best original screenplay.
There you go, you see?
Good lord, the mind boggles. Anyway,
Peter Weir won the BAFTA for Master and Commander.
He deserved it.
Yeah.
Because Peter Jackson just
for
threw up everything
for
else.
For screenplay, was it?
No, for a film.
For direction. Oh, excellent. So good.
Master
Gun is terrific, though. You could have seen a series of movies that would have been fantastic if it hadn't.
The only people that recognize him is BAFTA because they also gave him the director for The Truman Show.
Good. And he said, like, and I think something like Truman Show, I think it's his and Andrew Nichols' vision, actually. It's screenplay's terrific.
Yeah.
And Kerry's great.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Kerry's really great.
I would argue Kerry is underrated as a.
I would agree. I completely agree.
And I think
he's very good.
I think that Dumb and Dumber 2 was a poor choice.
Oh, wow, was it a bad choice? And
yes.
Kick-Ass 2 was also a bad choice.
Yes. Yeah, but he knew that.
I like Ace Ventura 2. That's all I
that, That's a classic. Underrated sequel.
Yeah.
I think. Like Jim Carrey, sort of when he decided to come back, I thought he would have been better to focus on dramatic roles.
Me too.
He's majestic. He's not bad. Like I think the film is not great, but he's quite good.
I'd agree with that.
Then Bruce Almighty,
which is fun. but not much more.
Yeah, it's better than Evan Almighty.
True.
Yes, but then he had Lemony Snicket. He was fantastic.
He's great. That's not a bad little film.
Yeah, no, I liked it.
You're talking about films that I'm crying out to see sequels for. Lemony Snicket and Master and Commander.
And you're not going to get them.
No,
Lemony Snicket's becoming a Netflix TV
show. TV show, I see that.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
Well, in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Thank God they never made a sequel to that.
Oh, yeah.
The two-man show.
EdTV does not count. And you remember
EdTV? I quite like EdTV.
That was around
the same
time.
It's actually good for Ed Harris. Woody Harrison is great in it.
No,
it's McConaughey and Harrelson, is it?
No, that's True Detective. Very different show.
It's Matthew McConaughey.
Very similar concept.
And Jen Elfman.
Is it not Woody Harrelson? Is his brother?
Is it?
He writes the book My Brother Pissed on Me or something.
Oh, hang on.
I'm not sure it's Woody Harrelson.
I've completely forgotten it.
Are you praising a Ron Howard film?
There are some that are praising.
It's hard. Like, there's a lot of. He makes okay films. It is Harrelson. Good, thank you.
Okay.
I'll accept the apologies and the retractions.
Rob Reiner, Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, I liked it. It's
Martin
fun.
Landau.
It doesn't quite have the bite the Truman Show has, but it is good.
How is it so bland? I remember nothing of it except the poster of McConaughey staring at a camera on a bed looking all right.
We should all rewatch it and come back next week and
apologize. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Because it has a Bon Jovi soundtrack.
That's the problem, right?
That was ill thought out. Yeah. Let's try and pull this back. I've got to say, last one, because I watched it yesterday, The Skeleton Twins.
Oh, God.
Right,
I could have told you not to watch this.
Do you see the raves out there for this? We've had this discussion before about Sundance films, and I'm using that in Sundance films and their perceived quality. And I think I've read somewhere that the air up there affects people's reviewing, because there seems to be so many masterpieces that come out from Sundance that are kind of terrible. And
it's also exclusivity, I think, as well. You know, getting to call the next great masterpiece.
Oh, of course it is.
Statistically, nobody's going to remember that you praise the Skeleton Twins. They're going to remember that you recognise
them. Bloody well should, because I'm going to hunt down
There's
to find out
list.
Who they are.
You're going on the list.
I take it you didn't like this
one. It's okay. It's not great. The problem is that you have three performances that are actually pretty good. Bill Hader, Kristen Wiig, and Luke Wilson, actually. Was really good, actually, weirdly, in a really small role. You think your character is set up a particular way, and you think it's going to go a particular way, and it doesn't. And he actually injects quite a bit into it. It's actually brings it out. It's more three-dimensional than you would expect. Those parts, the stories are contrived, and then, like, there's a sequence right at the start where they're like the Arx twins, Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, and he tries to commit suicide, and she's thinking about committing suicide at the same time, because they're twins, and that's what happens in movies with twins. So once you get past that, you're okay, it's fine. Yeah, exactly. It's that nonsense. And so we get it, and then he comes home to stay with her because he has to recover. So far, so indie. And it doesn't stray from that path. It's
twindy, if you will.
It really is. It's as twindy as it gets. And there's that kind of screenplay where you know there's going to be an outrageous, dancey kind of sequence because it's going to be quirky. Of course there is.
Oh, God.
It's an American art house film. That's
it's indie American, not mumblecore, it's not even that.
It's not very good.
It's indie by numbers. It's the kind of thing that makes you hate American independent film.
Because put that in the holster.
It has this kind
of
narrow...
I like the way
it
went from it was okay to it's everything I hate about American.
It's not, that isn't, but it makes you want to hate that kind of cookie cutter thing. Because they generally have this kind of width about them. They're within these boundaries. And they think they're being brave within those boundaries, but actually quite conservative within that. Like, there's nothing... It's not saying anything. You haven't heard a million times before, and a million American films the last 20 years that has said. And seeing it for the acting, don't expect much more.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're going for that sort of thing, Josh Radnor did one of those. It's called Liberal Arts.
Yeah, not great.
If you want to see a film that's indie by the numbers, that is it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the How I Met Your Other Guy, right?
Yeah.
I got a pass on that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think I've had my fill. Speaking of that,
Indian
Phil.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, he's back. He's shouting his links. You better believe it. Sorry,
that's
as good as it gets. I won't get that good again.
I've been rehearsing that for the past 3 weeks.
Oh, right. So.
Okay, a few things I'll talk about. I'll keep relatively short and sweet. Probably the best... Well, no, actually. actually. Not even the best, even though it is a very good film that I've watched.
We are the best.
That is a very good film.
A great film.
But no. 35 Shots of Rum. I'm sad to say this is the first Claire Denis film I've seen. It was sparked by all this talk of that issue of Little White Lies came out where they're talking about greatest female director working today. This is great. This is absolutely great.
Great. Are we talking top tier? Close to top tier?
You're getting close.
Okay. This is a fine place for you.
It's a very simple story about a widowed train driver who lives with his grown-up daughter in an apartment in the suburbs of Paris. And that's about it. They're both embarking on relationships. And beyond that, the script, the plot at least, doesn't... You needn't worry too much about it. There's a gentleness and a soulfulness and a humanity to it that's it's reminiscent of almost like Ozu.
Okay.
That's what we're talking here. It's
quite still.
Still, but always something happening within the frame
okay. And
always something very identifiable and very human and very well acted and very well put together. It's a very warm and inviting film, and I recommend anybody to watch it. I loved it.
Good enough.
But even better, if only just in its.
This is a positive film this week.
I know.
I'm overwhelmed.
Give me time.
We still
got
to get
the
top
10.
No, but that's true.
I watched Man with a Movie Camera. Giga Vertel's influential classic from 1928. Yeah, we're miles away from the Skeleton Twins here.
Aren't we though?
The film has been reissued.
It was reissued.
In the IFI.
Exactly.
So you saw it on the big screen.
I did. And even though it's been so many years since it was released, you can just appreciate how revolutionary it was at its time. The use of everything from double negatives to dissolves to all these techniques.
It's the kitchen sink, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Like, there's so much stuff.
I mean, that and the works of Eisenstein, they're, from that time, those are the big influences, and you can see why so much of cinematic language that is still in use today. You can see it being used there.
Montage, exactly.
I mean, if I signed with montage, then here you have so many other techniques being.
But it was where it was at, wasn't it? That was where the cinema was at in terms of development.
And the strange thing was, despite being so many years since it was made, still a lot of fun. Really fun. Very accessible. Which I think shocks a lot of people if they see it for the first time. But loved it.
I saw it in the cinema actually a few years ago on the big screen, and it's a different beast than watching it on the TV because the techniques and it's very visual, and it's great seeing it.
Also at the weekend, I saw, and it's also playing at the IFI, Best of Enemies, which is a documentary about the famous debates between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley during the 1968 Republican and Democratic conventions.
So famous that I either didn't know about them or completely forgot about them until I read this. Oh yeah, I think I remember this, maybe.
I used to actually be interested in what smart people thought.
Yes.
And they used to televise it.
Yeah.
What a crazy word.
I mean, I say debate. These are really just heightened, heated arguments. And they're an absolute riot. This is a very, very entertaining documentary. Which use a lot of the debates. They weren't terribly long. There were 8 or 9 of them all told.
So they showed a lot of the footage?
Yeah, but in between that, a lot of analysis from people who were very close to the action.
Okay.
And it's not so much about mining the points of view of either Republicans or Democrats. This is more about the two at the centre of it. They were talking about broader issues, broader themes beyond party lines.
Are we talking about the intellectualization of something, or like an actual weighty topic as opposed to the banality of politics now?
And it's something that's missing now because you see the griping between opposing parties in the States or anywhere else. That
I mean, the Republican debate is on, is it tomorrow evening, tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Which is going to be 10 turnips in
case.
Nine
turnips and Trump.
Competing to see who can race furthest.
He's going to lose to whoever, whichever. Plank of wood the Democrats put up.
Well, I don't know. The Democrats put up a plank of wood called John Kerry before, and he failed to win.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But what that's going to show you tomorrow night is nothing compared to the wit, the intelligence, and the sometimes very the bitterness, the sheer bitterness that comes with having to be a very effective member of the intelligentsia. You just, you know, you're up at a certain level, and you have to operate at a, you know, you have to be on your game and then some, because you're going up against an opponent who's right up there with you.
Also, you're talking about a time as well where America had a kind of a lot of people that could fill that void, like the great American writers that are kind of the exception of probably Philip Roth that are probably all passed now.
Yeah.
You kind of Naylor and Vidal, favorite examples of that. Saul Bellow, you got all those people that could talk and go on TV and talk about proper subjects.
But
and
make it relevant.
And make it
relevant. But that you let them. That's the thing, exactly. And that there'd be space for them in a schedule and on a network where there are four networks
on television
as opposed to God knows.
I mean, remember the kind of couple of years ago, there was a debate about showing debates on network television like that. You know, it was airtime. Airtime was being wasted. We couldn't make money on it. It's like,
yeah, I mean, come
God's
on.
God's sake, it's your democracy.
You could put a Kim Kardashian show on there. I mean, come on. You could do like My Sister's Dog Water, or Dog Walker, you know?
And then finally,
what's that on?
Yeah, the second season finale is fantastic.
I'm going to wrap this up quickly.
Sorry.
One last film I watched. One I've been meaning to watch for a while, and I was hesitant about it because, you know, biopics, but The Life and Death of Peter Sellers, which was...
Was that a BBC one, was it?
It was...
Jeffrey Rush.
It was BBC funded. Yeah, it starts Jeffrey Rush as Sellers, and it was BBC funded. Got a theatrical release, very limited, this side of the water. It was played on HBO in the US, and... It tries to avoid being biopic by numbers, but you know it's going in chronological order, so it can't help but feeling that way sometimes.
There
even though
beats anyway, then.
Yeah, there are definitely beats, but it never strays from the image of Sellers as being a pretty horrible human being. Very, I mean, self-centered doesn't begin to cover it.
I think that by all accounts, that's pretty accurate.
It's colourful. It's as I say, it is something kind of offbeat about maintaining that image. But ultimately, it's all held together by terrific performance.
I was going to say, how is Rush? Is he good?
He's great.
Yeah.
He's absolutely great. A lot of the characters, you know, Clouseau, Strangelove, all that. He gets those down pat.
Everybody in kind of House of Coronets.
Yeah. No, that's Alec Guinness.
That's Guinness, sorry.
Yeah. Sellers did that. No, that was
it. Everybody in Strangelove.
Strangelove.
But, yeah.
It's okay. It's passable. But, as I say, perhaps not as revolutionary as it thinks.
Okay.
Darren.
Okay. So, bank holiday weekend. Don't judge me.
Okay.
Oh, you
make some
promises. Mine's already worse. So.
Prepares himself to immediately judge her.
Yeah. In fact, I've already started just to make it more efficient. All right. So let's start with I watch Kingsman again because
what?
Because my roommate hadn't seen
get
it.
Get the hell out of here!
We talked about it last week as well, or the week before.
That's why I'm not letting you talk about it again this week. We have our opinions on this. I haven't seen it, and I already feel like I should have an opinion.
I'll never see it. The trailer was more than enough for me.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'll watch it again.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, it was not my idea. I was just being polite. It was in the room.
This is why I'll never get clean, Darren, with that passive attitude.
You're
just gotta
to
let it
minor.
Happen. I was observing. Yeah. I was observing, Jay. Okay.
Next.
And kick ass.
Next.
Jeez, is he just on a... Annoy Philip, Matthew
Vaughn. I feel I have to lower the tone of the podcast significantly. Okay, fine. I thought it was a workable modern day Spider-Man film. You know,
it's
nasty.
I liked Kick-Ass. I saw it first. I rewatched it about a year after it came out and plummeted.
As soon as I thought about it, I felt dirty.
And similarly, you know, what's the James Gunn film? Super, is it?
Yeah.
I said similar feelings about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just me.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'm gathering Kick-Ass may not be the one for this audience. Tron Legacy.
That isn't either.
I liked Tron. I remain the only person in the world who liked Tron Legacy because it's a blockbuster that has a Daft Punk soundtrack.
Yeah, great soundtrack.
I love that.
Michael Sheen playing David Bowie, firing his space gun randomly into the air, shouting libations for everybody.
It has terrible CGI.
That's not a film make, though. As
right.
Wonderfully
interesting.
Yeah.
This is a film that is predicated on being in a computer generated world, and it has terrible CGI.
At least Sean looks good for its time in the context of the
CG young Jeff Bridges.
That's the problem. Here's the thing, right?
That's so you say, and I agree with you, CG young Jeff Bridges is like the it's the figure that haunts my dreams. But when I saw that with somebody, I said, look, one of the Jeff Bridges is played by CGI, and I'm not making this up, by the way, because this sounds like a story I'm making up. I said, one of the Jeff Bridges is played by a CGI character. You know, it's like cutting edge. They're trying to do a cutting edge thing. And I come out, and she goes, you know, it wasn't that bad. I thought he could have just grown a beard for the old guy. I'm like, what? No. And I'm like, no, the young one. And she's like, oh. I thought he just had really bad plastic surgery.
That says a lot about the quality of the film, though.
No. That says a lot about the quality of his friends.
Yeah, that is also true.
I don't know. I liked it. Just the weirdness.
Is this the same roommate that watched the Kingsman?
Kingsman. Though? No. That's a different colleague.
Oh, okay.
You're seeing like a meshing of Darren's cinematic taste here.
I happen to like Tron Legacy.
I do. I agree.
Just CGI is dreadful.
No, the CGI is dreadful. Yeah. But I actually thought that when I saw it in cinemas, it was like one of three films I actually appreciated in 3D. Like that, The Cave of Forgotten Dreams, and obviously Avatar, as much as everything else about Avatar is terrible.
Hugo.
Not a fan of Hugo.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, I liked Hugo, but I didn't think the 3D.
You know you are, Jay.
That's not necessarily the case. It could be lukewarm occasionally.
3D actually works in Ant-Man.
I didn't
bother.
Cool. And then so 7 Days in Hell, the HBO documentary.
The tennis one, is it?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's quite good. It also has a great scene stealing Michael Sheen role. That's a nice segue.
It's a great idea. I've read mixed things about it. We'll watch it at some point.
It is very juvenile. It has no span of attention, but it does allow space for the history of like Swedish courtroom illustration. So I can't hate it on those terms.
Hey, he's got me. He had me at Swedish courtroom illustration.
The sordid history. Mission Impossible 2. The 2.5-hour-long shaving commercial.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I also watched Mission
Impossible. The 50-minute slow boat to hell that is the middle section, if I remember correctly.
That's not...
No, it's the scene when she gets off the boat and is walking up to meet him. Yeah. And it's just like... Oh,
I remember watching that. Hating it.
No, it is. It's terrible, but I couldn't look away. It was like a slow... It was actually a very slow-motion car wreck. There was a lot of slow motion.
And people talking.
John Woo, of course there's a lot of slow motion.
And doves.
But
this time, though, doves cried.
And it's the birds flying ahead of him and the explosions happening behind him. It's all happening in slow motion.
What happened to the man who made, obviously, Hard Boiled, but even in the Hollywood studios, he's a made face.
Face Off.
I love Hard Target. Also, Face Off does not stand up.
Oh, no, I watched
it.
It's fun, but it's terrible.
It is kind of terrible, but John Travolta.
I prefer Hard Target. I really like Hard Target.
But John Travolta.
Chance Boudreaux. That's all I'm going to say there.
I think, though, that if you're going to go down the whole Mission Impossible 2, Dougray Scott made the right move by
not being Wolverine. Do you reckon?
God, forks in the road, eh?
Yeah. If only then I wouldn't be appearing in, you know, I wouldn't be a guest star, a second billed guest star in Doctor Who.
There's a 4-hour cut. Out there.
Of Mission Impossible 2.
Of Mission Impossible 2. John Woo's original... Three and a half hour...
I don't look at the film and go, it's missing, you know...
It's long, but the end of it's called Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. That's actually years have passed. Yeah. It's actually moved on.
But the thing about it is...
Is it more slow-mo?
Of course, it's just the
2-hour cut in full slow-mo.
No. Well, I think that there are legitimate plot holes in Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah.
So what? Apparently the longer cut fills those plot holes in.
Does it explain why Brendan Gleeson is doing a terrible British accent?
No.
Okay, that's a mystery.
Even if he does that in 28 Days Later, which also doesn't stand up
Brendan
to
Gleeson
rewatch it.
I disagree.
Brendan Gleeson is an evil industrialist in Australia.
Yeah, with a British accent.
So he has, but he's not playing in Australia. So that means he could have been from anywhere.
Why not put him from Ireland?
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's going to buy an Irish pharmaceutical executive. Maybe if it was a drunk or a terrorist.
Hey, I think Brendan Gleeson is arguably at his best when he's doing a bad accent. Watch The Tailor of Panama for proof. He plays a Panamanian.
But then I'd have to watch The Tailor of Panama.
It's not bad. Okay. It's not bad.
Yeah, I know.
Your voice went up a little too high when you said it's not bad. I'm not buying that for a second.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I got them all in.
I have to be emphatic about this.
Okay.
It goes several octaves.
Mission Impossible 2. Up until Rogue Nation. No, up until Ghost Protocol had the biggest Mission Impossible MacGuffin. As in, what in the name of God is it? But Mission Impossible...
I thought Mission Impossible 3 had the thing where you don't find out what
it is. Mission Impossible 3, yeah. And it has the one that's like...
What is it? That's the point.
It's never actually explained.
Yeah, which I loved.
Whereas Mission Impossible 2 It explains it multiple times, and I still don't know what it is. It's some sort of
that's
virus.
A good sign.
But it's okay, because they've got cool names from Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Okay.
We
so
spent too much time.
We did
it.
Spend far too much time. So continuing Darren's trek through hell.
God.
One man's heart of darkness journey into whatever.
Please say your heart of darkness.
The horror.
Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on. It's massively underrated.
And
it's got Shatner jumping off a cliff at Christopher Lloyd in what my roommate correctly identified as a shout-out to, what's his name, Laurence Olivier's 14-foot jump in Hamlet. Apparently, Shatner intended it as a homage, which is amazing. Tell me that doesn't make
it. That makes me want to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Where nothing else has previously.
And also the bit where he kicks Christopher Lloyd in the face with that patented Shatner enunciation. Kick enough kick of you kick, and you're like, if he let go after
Shatner's
a second
bloody
kick,
great, isn't he?
Shatner's amazing.
I also watched the Star Trek. I watched Star Trek 6.
Oh, the Undiscovered Country,
yes,
which is legitimately a great Star Trek film. Yes. I would argue it's possibly the best star in the original cast. Better than 2, better than 4.
Come
on, but Christopher Plummer chewing the scenery.
Yes, he's awesome.
Which Christopher Plummer should always do.
He literally spins in his chair at the climax quoting Shakespeare.
Yes.
Like, and you're like, what do his underlings think of this? It's like Dr. Evil scene.
He's spinning around the chair with Shakespeare Must Be Tuesday.
He's a Klingon quoting Shakespeare.
Yeah. You haven't read Shakespeare until you've read it in the original Klingon.
Yorick.
But Star Trek 6 is great. Star Trek 3, I think, is underrated. If only because it looks really naff. And I really appreciate that it looks really naff. And also the fact that Leonard Nimoy isn't around means they actually give people who aren't Shatner things to do, which is quite handy. Okay, so Interstellar. Okay. You watched Interstellar.
Or is it still going?
No, it's still going.
It's actually a movie.
It's like the lightning round. Yeah,
he's only 2/3 of the way through it.
I like Interstellar.
I love it. I thought it was the best one last year.
I like
what?
It.
What? There we go.
Oh, God.
Come on, it's Kubrick does Spielberg.
No, it's not.
No. It does. In some ways, yes, Spielberg.
It inspires.
I can see the Spielberg. Yes, in that it doesn't have an ending. So,
come on, it has
the
like
first,
a Doctor Who ending.
But I will say, in as fair and as generous as I can be, the first hour I really, really liked.
I was
Philip watched it in the
IMAX.
And both of us are kind of, this is really good.
No, I was in love.
Then Anne Hathaway starts talking about love, and then I'm out. I was done.
I wasn't out, but it's just the script's the problem.
And then Matt Damon, I wonder if he'd be the bad guy.
But his name is Dr. Mann, and he was the best of us.
It
symbolism.
Has major problems, that film. Major
subtle
problems.
Symbolism.
And no, the last act is a
that
trap.
Docking
it's
not
a trap.
The docking
sequence. Close enough to a tragedy.
It is gutsy. I think it's nonsense.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't deny it's nonsense, but Christ, the fact that anybody had the gumption to take the leaps that it does.
But it does.
It doesn't change the fact that the middle act is a
but it sets the whole bloody thing up. It's not just like, it's just kind of, you know, oh yes, there, oh, look, we're bringing it back, look, ah, that's what the bookshelf was. Ah, oh, that's just like,
I know.
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus. Oh, look, the thing in the spaceship. Oh, look at the hand. Ah, no, stop it. For the love of Christ.
That is pretty much, that is the script for Interstellar. There was a lot of work done in reshoots.
I wouldn't actually be surprised by that.
But no, I mean, the idea of it as a story of a father who goes away from his child to do fantastic work.
It's a great story, it's just too much going on around it.
I don't know, I
no.
Okay, I continue to preach.
It's a 2.5-3 star film, but no more. And that's me being generous.
Oh, Jay is back, people.
Yes.
In a way, he never really left.
Actually true. Yeah. In other ways.
But mainly not in the true one.
Yes.
Next.
Okay, Black Hat. Michael Mann, continuing the masochism trend.
He hasn't seen it, he can't say a damn thing.
Wait, hold on, okay, well, I actually got
I
a visceral reaction. Yeah,
I
okay.
have seen it.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's better than... Hey, hold on.
It's better than what?
It's better than Public Enemies.
Yes, I hate Public Enemies,
so
did
I.
That's fine. Chris Hemsworth is...
As a
pointless
hacker.
And doesn't work at all as a hacker. I don't buy him as a hacker, I don't buy any part
but
of him.
Don't worry,
I don't even buy him as an
prison.
Actor. Pretending to be a hacker. I thought it looked very pretty, as
that's
you would expect.
That's a Michael Mann film, yeah.
But Michael Mann, in my humble opinion, has made a good film in quite some time, and this continues that.
Harsh. I think
I'm sorry, I wanted to like it. I don't see how anybody
I didn't love it. I thought it was grand. I thought it was manly.
It was just about it's just about watchable. But that's about as generous as it can be.
Okay.
You're right to say it's very man. It's none more man.
It is. It's like but he's like he's recycling bits from other films because he's devoid of his own of anything new. You
but
know,
like man films typically are. They're more interested in systems than they are in protagonists and stuff like that. Yeah.
But the whole, I mean, the whole intro with the run along the computer,
the lines.
I know. There is something kind of cheesy.
But that's
about
how we.
It.
That's
what?
How we explain
kind
hacking.
Of cheesy?
Yeah, that's how we explain okay, hacking to people. the files are in the computer.
But what I'm saying is, if you consider Mann a great filmmaker, which a lot of people do, and I suspect a lot of people
do
at this table, would we not, or should we not, expect a little more than that? Because that's a little hackneyed and a little dull. And I think he gets a pass because people say he's visionary and whatever. And I can see the visual.
Okay, visual.
We're
going
to get to that in a second. Yeah.
Right, no argument there. But shouldn't we expect more? Because I don't like I'm a huge fan of Manhunter. I'm a huge fan of The Insider, which I think is his absolute masterpiece, and
really?
I love
not
it. Yes, he is overrated. Remarkably overrated.
No, wrong.
Disagree.
No,
possibly the last good thing Robert De Niro ever did.
Yeah, he's good in it. He's great in it. Yeah. Chino's terrible in it, and there's so many problems with Heat. I'm not.
Let's
sure
get back to Black Hat because you're good.
Sorry,
because I'll only hurt you.
I liked it as in terms of. As far as Michael Mann movies go, in terms of the exploration of the idea of this, like, systems within which people exist. Beautifully shot, I thought it is that.
But that's the minimum you expect from
that. No,
man.
I know, but the minimum
that's like
from
Spielberg
man.
Saying, you know, it's
there's
it's
a father,
more,
yeah, there's a
and there's
father,
a dad
yeah.
in it, like, oh, well, then it's a great Spielberg film. No,
I'm not saying it's a great man film. I'm just saying it's a competent man film, which makes it a good film in general. Like,
no,
Lord,
it doesn't. It just makes it fairly competent.
I think Mann's level of competence is good. Like,
I think we're
Mann's
disagreeing on what competence means, though. I think it's fairly competent.
I would consider The Keep not to be competent. I would consider, you know, I would argue. You know,
kind of enjoy The Keep.
Wait, what?
There you go. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense, but it's fun.
I missed this.
It's okay.
I'm going home to watch Miami Vice.
The film or the TV show?
Both.
They are amazing.
I'm not doing it. We're finally at the end of
Darren throwing conversation topics into the middle and watching people fight about them.
Yeah.
I actually watched Manhunter.
Which is brilliant.
That's a very good film.
That is brilliant.
I like it, but it's not aged well.
What?
It has 80s things going on, but I think for the most part that works to its favor. I don't find it. It's of its time, and it's very good.
It's the logical continuation, the stuff that Mann was doing in terms of the first two seasons of Miami Vice.
It is the 80s. That's what makes a Mann film in some ways, just the stylistics of it.
I like it a lot.
But, yeah, he travels via, like, heartbeat in the final sequence of the film. He travels via 80s pop tunes.
Yeah,
Peterson's great.
Peterson and Cox are great. They're all very good.
Any issues I have, even though I'm saying this as a man fan, it's
you don't
the,
tire of saying
the
that.
Main man, if you will.
I know
a man. Man.
I like saying that, especially in relation to Manhunt, because it's one of the films I'm not so hot on. I like it, but yeah, I think the story's a bit thrown around. And it's an issue that was highlighted when Red Dragon came out, because I think the story there is structured a little better.
No, I think narratively, in terms of a narrative cohesive story with a beginning and the end, I think Red Dragon's a better adaptation of Red Dragon, but...
Manhunter's a better film.
I would argue, first of all, Manhunter's a better film, but also in terms of the
story. It's a more distinctive film, certainly. And Cox is a better Hannibal, certainly.
Agreed.
Oh, hey.
Agreed.
Wait. What?
Yeah.
He's sort of... Like, he's thuggish.
I would argue Hopkins is third
best.
That's
what makes him a better Hannibal. He's more interesting because Hopkins, as enjoyable as he is to watch as Hannibal, it goes down a relatively predictable route.
But it wasn't really at the time, though. Like, I mean, when you look at Silence of the Lambs...
By the time Red Dragon comes out,
no, he is camping it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's elements of camp even in Silence of the Lambs.
No, yeah, there are.
I mean, there definitely are.
It's hemmed in by the way that Dem shoots it in a very sort of matter-of-fact way. But I'd argue Cox, Cox's version of Lecter is a guy who kills college girls. There's nothing interesting. You know,
he's droll. He's smarter, and he's clearly smarter than everybody in the room.
And there's also something very wiry about
there
him.
There is.
Gives him an extra sense.
He makes
of
me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Watching him, just even make a turn.
The fact that he's in a standard cell, where he could actually reach out and grab you if you were close enough.
But I mean,
wouldn't put a basket.
But it's also a very stylized cell as well. It's all white. Like, it's very clearly the inspiration of, say, Brian Fuller's sort of Hannibal.
Yeah,
cell
which
Hannibal.
But
yeah,
it's
just
great.
I was watching that episode the other day, actually.
It's a fascinating contrast to Silence of the Lambs.
Well, that's it.
It's
like,
so
Manhunter is much more stylized in terms of, like, color coordination and stuff like that as well. Like, it feels like
it's
a fever dream.
It is very interesting.
But I mean, like, even stuff like when he goes to the cereal or goes to the shopping center with his
all
son.
All the cereal.
All the cereal is arranged in a color pattern way. So, like, it's orange to represent sort of the lurking danger of the outside world, blue to represent his home, and when the son asks him about catching Lecter, there's like Maxwell House arranged in the background, so he's asking him against a sea of red, you know. I mean, the composition.
I remember Peterson coming out after seeing Hannibal, and he had that kind of where he's framed tiny Peterson against the massive wall kind of thing, and it's that classic man kind of
the
man being dominated by the system.
Very good.
And it is beautiful, and I think it probably informs a lot more of, say, the Fuller TV show than Silence of the Lambs does, which kind of why I'm
not necessarily a bad thing.
Not necessarily a bad thing. I'm kind of interested. I would love to see a more stylized version of Silence of the Lambs. Like, we were talking about Silence of the Lambs a while ago, and it is shot in a very objective, very matter-of-fact, very straightforward
way.
Yeah, a very procedural way, and it's great. But I think that there's... I would love to see, like, a Manhunter version of Silence of the Lambs with reds and greens and blues and sort of angles and carefully meticulous captions. So that's me. Sorry about that.
Okay, right.
Niall!
I am rattling through them. Right, okay. So I rewatched 10 Things I Hate About You.
Not bad.
I enjoy that.
Yeah.
Anything that has Robin and the Joker in it, you know, then I'm on board.
Right. Carry on.
Let's get that out.
Chop.
I liked it too.
This is film four. It was immediately followed by The Breakfast Club.
There we go.
That was a nice double bill.
Except for the unforgivable crime of Ali Sheedy being turned into it.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, God, that's the worst makeover in history. Leave her alone, she was fine.
She was lovely.
Broke my heart that didn't
But look at it this way, if we didn't have The Breakfast Club, we wouldn't have that montage in the middle of Ted 2.
Don't remind us.
Nice. On which?
I haven't seen
Ted 2,
thankfully I'll never see it, so it's fine. I can't even...
I rewatched Jerry Maguire.
I like Jerry Maguire.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's
like
remember when Cuba Gooding Jr. got an Oscar?
Yes. I don't see how, but
it's a fun performance, but it's no more than that.
But Cruise also immediately like going to direct a video as well. Like,
Cruise is great, that film.
Oh no, he is.
Cruise is a great actor when he's given material.
They turned over one of the Sky Movies to
I saw it. It's weird.
Sky Tom Cruise. Yeah, so I also watched A Few Good Men.
I like that.
I watched Eyes Wide Shut. That's all I gotta say about that.
Well, yeah, see, there you go.
Nice white shirt.
Yep.
Can we have that old, you know, a great director's mediocre film is good?
I think Nice White Shirt's a masterpiece.
Okay.
Wow. So see now the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
I don't dig Nice White Shirt.
I think it's fine.
I love it.
Anyway, I then rewatch all four Mission Impossibles.
You sucker for punishment.
So
Hold on. Only the second one is truly irredeemable.
Okay, fair
That's
enough.
True.
That is true.
The first one has a helicopter in it.
The first one's a lot of fun.
And John
Fourth
Bush.
One. Fourth one's the best.
But the
I like the
third
one.
I've got to go.
Third ahead. One is okay, but it is elevated a lot by PSH.
Yeah.
The best villain of the
best
series.
Best villain by some of this.
And also Abrams.
Fourth is the best now.
True. All true.
Abrams does very well. He does. He really has a very good handle on it.
I like the mystery box. Like it's a film where Abrams is literally like, okay, the mystery box is part of the plot.
Yeah.
Not
like,
just
hey,
I get
so
to actually include this. Yeah. I'm not even going to explain this. Actually, you watch Mission Impossible. Can you clarify to me, right? So I watched Mission Impossible recently, and I feel like I'm not spoiling a film that's what 25, 20, whatever
years old.
When I reveal that John Voight is the bad guy, right?
Yes, right. Yes.
Did it seem
you couldn't see that coming?
Yeah. John Boyd only plays such upstanding and wholesome people.
Without nary a sneer.
Yeah. But you remember, much like that nice Christopher Walken fellow, but you remember the bit where basically Ethan discovers that he's alive and it's revealed that he's a bad guy. Does it seem to you like that was edited in at the last possible minute and that it was meant to be on the train? It was meant to be like, John Boyd's alive, what a surprise. Thinking the way that that's shot.
I don't know. It does. It's
like, it's a really weird. It reveals him as the villain twice, but it treats the second one as more suspenseful. It's really odd.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Okay. Well, I think the second reveal is to everybody else rather than to Eden.
No, but even to us. Like, even to us. Like, because it's you see the hand on the thing and it turns out to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Perhaps. I didn't think anything. I was watching it, you know. Passively. Yeah, exactly. I wasn't taking anything.
When did Simon Pegg come in? Third one?
Yeah, is he third?
Simon
third,
third one, yeah.
Oh, so safely watched the first two.
He's the computer technician in the third one. It's got Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Yeah, which everybody loves. But also Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes,
that's
I love that speech where he's dangling around the plane. It's like you got a girl or a wife.
Oh, that is actually quite threatening.
That is a brilliant scene.
He made the most out of a role that could have been so rote.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we'll come to Mission Impossible 5.
Mission Impossible 4. Ghost Protocol. That is so much fun.
Those scenes in the
Burj are dizzying.
Yeah. Aren't they though?
Oh my god.
Yeah. Watch that in the cinema screen. Let alone IMAX.
Yeah.
Good god.
Yeah. And I think it's very much the template for Rogue Nation. But
But you can tell that the person responsible for doing for storyboarding that scene in the car park was a person who came from an animated background.
Yes.
Because only somebody in animation could think of that.
That is a great sequence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really is.
And the car.
I liked it a lot, actually. I even suspended my absolute despising of Simon Pegg to enjoy that.
Yep.
But anyway, it was good.
But more on that later. Shall we?
I also rewatched Usual Suspects. I loved Usual Suspects.
Usual Suspects is great. One of the rare examples of a film where the twist actually enhances it.
It's true.
Take that, M. Night Shyamalan.
Coming to Dublin soon.
Really?
M. Night Shyamalan, yeah.
What's he doing?
The Visit. He's visiting for The Visit.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like there's going to be some sort of horrible twist. Like, I have to see an M. Night Shyamalan film.
The twist is, it's not that film. Oh, thank you, Craig.
On to the news.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Finally.
Good news.
Oh, what? Everyone.
Everyone.
Everyone. Yes. We got a trailer for Room.
Yes.
And it is suspenseful as well.
And it shows far too much.
It does show.
If you haven't read the book, I would be steering way clear of that trailer.
But it's very enjoyable.
Have you watched it, haven't you?
Have
you read the book?
Fantastic.
No. Okay, interesting.
So, yeah, that's ruined it.
Great. No,
well, I mean, it's just how trailers are.
It's the nature of trailers. But it is.
Particularly in this age, yeah.
Yeah. It looks great. It looks great. Really well shot. I'm dying to see it.
He's actually been recording the soundtrack with the RG Contra.
Nice.
Who's composing?
It's Renix.
Of course. Mr. Renix self.
Cannot wait to see it.
So, The Room is one of three Irish films that are going to play at TIFF. At the Toronto International Film Festival. So, it's going to play there. That will be its Canadian premiere. With Brooklyn and The Lobster.
Last question. Is Brooklyn an Irish film? Irish film? In the sense of money?
Yes, the film board.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Irish cast, Irish
only
and
only
then that.
Yeah.
Irish characters.
Money in it.
I just wasn't sure. It seemed too prestigious for Irish money. and possibly successful.
Too tasteful, yeah.
It's like, yeah, shit, we put our money in the wrong film. Again, for the last 50 years. Anyway, sorry.
Place in historically, so, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Irish film, I'm really kidding. You know I love you, really.
I've seen it and I cannot say anything about it because I'm embargoed to an unspecified date.
So, Price
to
of
the
Desire
end of time.
Is it as good as The Price of Desire?
The Price of Desire is a shit sandwich. I'm sorry. Price of Desire is awful.
It's actually a shit sandwich quotes on the poster.
Yeah. That's the best you can find, yeah.
Two
thumbs there.
I hate Price of Desire.
Also embargoed onto an unspecified date.
The year 3000.
No, I saw
the bottom of the ocean.
I saw that public screening, as did you, therefore there is no embargo. Even though you were asked to take down
I was
your
asked
review.
To take down my review.
Yeah.
It was a masterpiece, I tell you. A masterpiece.
Or the movie, and then we compared Bad Irish films, and I had, what's the name?
The one with the riding.
With the
riding stables.
With the 5-year-old swinging the camera.
All About Eva will be
playing at the Underground Cinema Film Festival.
Do you see it now? You haven't seen it. Do you see it? Please, just so I can compare notes.
But I mean, it's not.
It's the worst Irish film I've ever seen.
Ross?
It's the worst Irish film I've ever seen.
You haven't seen The Price of Desire?
No, I haven't. Remarkably, two in one festival would have killed me.
Yeah.
would have killed me by that.
Next,
scene.
This is sorry. All too miserable. We do love Irish film. Seriously, yes. Joking aside.
And the Irish film, Irish Polish co-production, 11 Minutes from Jerzy Smolenski, is with Richard Dormer in the lead, is playing at Venice.
Oh, yes, indeed.
So Philip's off to Venice. So we may.
We
may
expect
the
reports.
Well,
back
I have to make all my bookings and arrangements, and I have to see if I can actually get to see 11 Minutes on the schedule. But yes,
but it's only 11 minutes long, now. So
yeah.
It's
like 24. What's
that? It's only 11.
It's like a low budget 24. Yeah,
very low budget.
Yeah, they had like a 20% of the budget for 20.
DIFI has announced a new head of cinema programming.
Thank you. That's where I've been the last few weeks. Delighted to accept the job. No, I'm not sorry.
So the Access Cinema's David O'Mahony is the new
fine choice.
Yeah,
Access Cinema Museum, great stuff. So yeah. Good on him. Good.
And knowing
on
his taste, we expect a fine choice at Horrorthon this year.
Good fellas.
Yeah. Yep. 25.
Which is not Horrorthon, maybe, but you know, in general.
In fairness, if it was the Horrorthon surprise film. You
just
would
for that,
okay.
Just for that Ray Liotta with the gun in the face.
No,
I think just in general
just
you'd be okay with that.
Bouncy.
Yeah,
that's
true. That is true. That is true.
Yeah, so,
great.
So that is that's really good news because the man is he's a good one. And then there's a new studio in Limerick. They finally have agreed that some sort of deal for it. Troy Studios is going to be set up at the in Castle Troy in Limerick in the former Dell factory, and it's Ardmore and John Keller of TV3 who are.
340,000 square foot.
It's got to,
nice.
Yes, it's adding another 70,000 feet of sound stages. So it's
good
Lord.
I assume, yes, it's primarily interesting.
So it's just kind of battling against Northern Ireland, kind of Northern screen.
It's pretty much going to add another like 2/5 onto the size of the studio space that's available in the Republic.
Jesus,
it is.
So, if nothing else, we have the facilities.
Yeah, we have. If nothing else, we have the space. As long as it's not like that one that's in Andalusia that nobody goes to, then. Moving on to the top 10.
Okay.
Finally, excellent.
Yes, at 10, I do not know what these are. 2015 Film Festivals.
I'm going to guess this is a contribution to the top 10 from the Gays Film Festival. This
but
is my
all of
which
them
would be great.
Combined, all of the box office combined, maybe.
There were a good few films.
There was.
And I was actually at one of the screenings over the weekend.
As was I.
And good crowds, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I was doing a Q&A at the participants.
The participants.
Yes, he was.
And I went to see the new Peter Greenaway, Eisenstein in Guanajuato.
Which is not surprising. Is it good?
It's not bad. It's Greenaway. So, given his style, take it or leave it, whether you like it or not, you know what you're going to get.
Okay.
The participants is a very interesting Irish film, something that you don't ordinarily see. It's sort of...
interesting or bad?
It's good interesting.
Interesting is always
I'm not
going to
be fooled again,
it's good interesting. It's that... But it's got a kind of... if it had been silent for the whole duration, it would have been fantastic.
Oh, it's a big chunk of it.
It starts off in silence and there's minimal dialogue, but if it had been completely silent, it would have been
something to celebrate.
It would have been it's got a Lord of the Flies type feel to it.
Ooh.
But it would have been Lord of the Flies by way of the tribe had it been.
Good grief.
Had it been completely silent.
I'm just quaking just sitting here. Good grief. God, don't say that.
And the tribe is in my top 5 this year.
Yeah, no. Not on the same level as kind of conceptually type thing. But
interesting.
It's a most intriguing movie. I recommend checking it out if it comes back around again.
Good enough.
It kind of experimental a little, so it's good. Anyway, at 9, Amy.
This is still doing well.
That's got legs. I haven't seen it. It's running again for another week, so I'll probably get some.
It has £3 million at the combined UK-Irish box office. It's one of the highest grossing documentaries of all time.
And a smaller drop than the next two films on the list as well.
Yep.
Only 26%, and this is its fifth week.
Yeah.
That's way above expectations,
for a
I'm presuming.
To chart for 5 weeks.
It surfed a lot of hype.
Particularly in summer.
Good reviews,
yeah.
And it's counter programming to a lot of bigger stuff.
True.
Yeah, there's a lot of things counter programming.
Yeah, you say that, but some of the scene was
but
also.
This is the one that succeeded, and more power to it. Well done, it's excellent.
At 8, and just still hoovering up money for like nobody's business, it is the feel good hit of the summer, Jurassic World.
4.1 million. I'm glad that my money didn't go towards
it. No, and I'm sorry mine did.
But hey, don't worry, the sequel is not always going to take place in an island.
That just makes it so much better.
Sorry, the first sequel didn't all take place on an island.
Good point. Yeah, that turned out so well. I liked The Lost World.
Yeah, but the parts that the worst parts of The Lost World are when it goes to San Diego.
But I mean, also, like, it's the best remake of King Kong. which is a very low bar to pass.
That really is a low bar to pass.
It's a very low bar to pass.
Mm. Anyway, Jurassic World is crap. Let's move on.
I haven't even seen it, but it's going to put me off more than enough, and I'm not really interested.
Good, my job here is done.
I've
just waited you from going to Jurassic World.
Like, yeah. I may watch it again just to see.
Good.
At 7, take 2.
Didn't see it, won't see it.
Ditto.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have, yeah. That's why I went to see it. It was very meh. It wasn't the worst
thing. Was it Bradshaw gave a really good review?
But yeah, The Guardian rated Ted as like the second best movie of 2013.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there's a curveball for you.
Yeah.
But no, like, I liked it better when it was a Star Trek episode. It is very clearly Seth MacFarlane borrowing the entire plot of an episode of The Next Generation with Michael Dorn playing Worf in it. And it ended the climax.
It's better when it's 22 minutes long and
yes.
animated.
Yes.
At 6, Hot Pursuit.
How did this even get
in
top
6?
10? I'm surprised.
Well, everybody, people like Reese Witherspoon and Sophie Vergara.
No, they don't.
That's a lie. I was hoping you wouldn't call me on it.
Sorry, Darren.
People are looking for that.
I missed you. I missed you,
Darren. The heat type thing.
Well,
know,
quality wise, apparently, this isn't it.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it, but reviews have not been kind.
My wife went to see it earlier. She said it was a bad. Somewhat enjoyable bad film.
It was a film that happened.
Yeah, exactly. So
put that on the poster.
At 5, Ant-Man.
The little movie that goes a long way.
I liked it.
Ant-Man is fun.
I liked it. I'd say. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Actually,
But I'd say that I really like the effects in it.
Mid-tier Marvel, but it's fine.
I think that's fun. Michael Douglas is weird.
Brilliant.
Michael Payne is great.
Yeah, King of Tron Legacy.
Douglas.
The Wall Street,
just
Michael
like Liberace.
The way he did the effects when he shrink down actually did remind me, quite frankly, of the Incredible Shrinking Man. It worked well. Like, it looked not as good as that because you know.
Because it's not old.
Ever. But it's good and it's fun and
you can see its production.
You can see where the problems are. Rudd is fine. Michael Payne is fine. You get a good laugh out of both. It's
the other two lads on there who are very generic.
And also ethnic. It's the most ethnic team in the Marvel Universe.
And they're all criminals.
Oh, that gag is.
But like that, the whole train setting is hysterical. I love the whole thing of it.
They had wicked problems getting the rights. They were very restricted.
I would imagine. Imagine what you could say about it. But that worked out. It worked well. I was laughing my ass off.
You couldn't let Thomas kill anyone.
But it's the eyes.
It's a Marvel Universe
film. The eyes look so inside. I like
that. And the giant cockroach.
Yeah.
Was
like
it Ant? Wasn't it?
Oh, Ant, sorry.
He's coming back for the sequel.
I'm not sure where I was and like when I was going in, what my explanations were, but I probably enjoyed it more than I thought it would.
Well,
I certainly
word
didn't
of
think
mouth
I thought it
seems to be people who are quite fatigued with superhero films are actually enjoying it.
Yeah, it seems solid, entertaining, and funny.
Which makes
the
you
worst thing
it
about it is it's a caper film, but the worst thing about it is
the caper is terrible.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
a mobile. Like,
that's the part of it. Yeah, that's the bit where you go, this would
be. And the whole
a
thing around it is like, yeah,
Jen,
you know it's
Joe
a real caper because the thing has happened. It's fine. I don't know much about Ant-Man though, in terms of. Because people see
he's the domestic abusive superhero. But don't worry, they gloss over that in the film by having his wife die.
Go
to the quantum universe, which is like the thing he tells the kid after he's disposed of the body with his super science powers.
I've seen people talk about the different versions of the film they like to see, and it's like. Just give me the film. I don't read comic books.
Yeah.
Anymore?
What's at number 4?
Yes.
At number 4 is Minions.
Yeah,
so recently, Minions went mental all over Dublin, all over Swords.
Accidentally.
When a gigantic inflatable minion broke free from his tether and caused traffic chaos.
And creepy little video memes of kind of just eyes rolling across the road. Which I quite thought were quite funny. But not funny enough to see this film, unfortunately. But there you go.
At 3, it's Southpaw.
I'm surprised at the performance of this.
It's only dropped 15% in the second week.
Yeah.
And it can't be word of mouth.
But I saw the trailer, I was like, yeah, I think I've seen the movie, I'm not going to bother seeing that. Yes, it's like that's exactly every boxing thing in the world.
It is yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure Gyllenhaal is fine.
But everybody likes Jake Gyllenhaal.
They
right?
do.
Really?
They do.
You accept that?
I do.
Sorry, who doesn't like Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah. I find him sort of meh.
You're
the only one. He's back. He's like, there was a while after Brokeback Mountain. When
Prince of Persia.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But now in the last few years, he's had some big roles.
He's been
and
good
most performances.
Things, yeah.
Okay. Enemy, Nightcrawler, etc.
Plus, there's always the chance he may introduce it to the sister. And, you know.
Well, you don't have to throw him for it. But yeah, it's a long, drawn-out process.
We have a plan.
Don't get your hopes up there. That's
all I'm saying. Diagram.
Well, who doesn't love Maggie?
Everybody loves Maggie.
Exactly. Indeed.
At 2, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Ah,
let's talk about this.
You talk about it, I haven't seen it. Don't sit here and
oddly
listen.
Punctuated Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Oh, come on. Yeah, how many? This, I was hoping at least it would be fun. It's okay. It's not, it is fun, but it's nowhere near as memorable as the fourth film. It has a very weak villain. And no,
it's Scottish guy, Sean Harris.
I thought you were going to say Sean Villan. there's the villain you want. There's a shared universe.
Yeah. It's just like, but none of the set pieces stick out like the Burj Khalifa, because very few do. But like, it goes pretty efficiently. Cruise is still his dependable self. And Rebecca Ferguson, good. Grief, give that woman more roles now. She is terrific as a possible double agent, maybe not such a.
She took the Paula Patton, Maggie Q.
Yeah, except it's an even more interesting.
Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah.
But it's an even more interesting character than all of
Michelle
those.
Michelle Monaghan's the wife, so she was never an agent or anything.
Yeah, but Rebecca Ferguson's character is more interesting because she's a double agent, so you're never quite sure what side she's on. She's actually playing an ally and the bad guy at the same time. She is doing Sean Harris's job for him because the script gives him nothing. And. She's great. She's absolutely great. She's the best thing
about
this
film. What happened to his wife?
Who cares?
Tom Cruise is married?
Like,
oh, yeah. Well, at the end of the fourth film, he's separated from her and he only watches her from afar. So
okay, nice. So it's healthy. It's a healthy relationship.
Well, no, she knows that he's there. She does. Like, she sees him across the bay.
And yeah, and that makes that sounds so reassuring, doesn't it?
No, but she smiles, so she's not like completely put out by the fact that he's creepy stalker Superman.
Some people like that, yeah.
She's gonna love that kind of thing. Can't think who.
Cruise control.
Yeah. It's but Mission Impossible. Like,
life imitating actor, right?
Yeah. hey, indeed. But as Friday Night fodder, ticks all the boxes.
It's, yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's a logical distillation of the Mission Impossible sort of structure in that, like, when you think of the Mission Impossible films, you never think of plot.
It's as close as America has come to making Bond, though, is it not? You know,
the Mission Impossible franchise?
Yeah.
Or the
Mission Impossible has been knocking around for a long time anyway.
As
an idea.
But the film franchise.
But I think in terms of, like, an American franchise doing Bond, like, ignores the quintessential Britishness of Bond. Like, if you were doing that, you'd have to transpose and make it American, and I'd argue Bourne does that better. I'd say Bourne is like, because it loses the irony and it gains the seriousness and the importance that you sort
of
expect.
Yeah, but Bourne isn't a man on a government sanctioned mission.
Bourne isn't.
Ethan Hunt, like 60% of the time. How many times do they shut down the IMF?
I don't know, but they threaten to disavow him every time.
It's just not a film.
Do that for Bond as well to some degree.
Yeah, but they don't tell Bond, if you fail, we're going to pull the
roll and possibly kill you.
But I still think it's closer in spirit to Mission Impossible than Bourne.
Yeah, I think.
But I mean, yeah. Well, Tom Cruise has wanted to play like Bond. Like,
that would have been a big mistake.
Yeah, well, I mean, because was it Night and Day? Is like the closest thing to a Roger Moore Bond film.
God.
So, yeah, no, but it is. It's a Roger
Jesus
Moore Bond film
Christ.
To open for second Bond.
I'd never hear those words being uttered.
Big fans, eh?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I'll take your word for
it's
it.
It's not.
Night and Day is as a Roger Moore Bond film is.
It's better than Octopussy.
I was going to say it's better than.
Night and day, you're not the one.
I have a question.
Yeah, it has a catchy theme.
You've all seen Rogue Nation, right?
Yes.
No, I've seen it on Friday.
Oh,
no,
okay.
Sexism.
In what?
In this.
No.
I've been reading
ambient.
Quite a bit.
Okay, I would say I don't think so, because is this relating to Rebecca Ferguson's character? She's more than a match.
Yeah, but it's more towards the objectification type end of it.
Oh yeah, well she does. Yes,
I don't know. I don't think it's objectifies her any more
Cruise
than any other.
As well.
Yeah, but men can be shirtless because they don't actually
have breasts. Is that what it comes down
okay,
to?
Well,
I don't think that really compares.
I know, no, I know that there's a difference between the male tits and the
Ant-Man, if you're going for the whole objectifying male characters, though, you know, because Paul Rudd's in.
That kind of does defeat the purpose of Ant-Man as an electronic banker, regular schlub. And oh my god, he's got like a 10 pack.
I don't know.
Trek Into Darkness.
No.
I just wonder. I've seen a bit said about it.
I think I know what it even first. There is one scene where they've just got out of a dangerous mission and she has to change her clothes while Simon Pegg and Tom Cruise are there at the scene.
And Tom and Simon Pegg, being the lad character, does make passing reference to.
Oh, he's awful.
Then again, I think you can just put that down to him being a. I suppose is he supposed to be likable? It's not working.
Likable? Since when?
I have no idea. All I know is it. Like, it didn't bother me as much as, say, any like Star Trek Into Darkness. You say that's the that's the exemplar.
Again, and in defense of Star Trek Into Darkness,
there was meant
to be a similar scene for Benedict Cumberbatch's character, which got edited out and shouldn't have got edited out, which would have made it better. Not good.
Less bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I think her character on the whole, I think it's just such.
Yeah, but
a
could
great
it do
match.
Without the shots?
Any mainstream Hollywood blockbuster could do without the shots, pretty much. Like outside of Mad Max, I'm trying to give a recent Hollywood.
But isn't that the point, though? Then is.
Yeah. No. No. Like, we should not talk about it.
Yeah. That's exactly not talk about it.
And ignoring it because it's ambient is defeating the purpose of it. You know?
I would imagine so. I haven't seen it, so I just. But I'm curious.
It's no Jurassic World where Bryce Dallas Howard's failures as a mother kills.
Jesus,
dozens
isn't
of people.
It? Isn't it bad though when all you're comparing it to stuff that's worse as opposed to?
As opposed to saying this is a film that is not sexist in any way.
No, it's barely sexist.
That's a compliment.
It's essentially.
It's a lot less, isn't it?
If you're saying it's a lot less sexist than the other film, as opposed to
you're putting it up there with Mad Max in terms of the.
I'm saying that
there are very few films that came out this summer where there was a strong female co-character in it, even not necessarily lead, but co-character in it, but lead in the case of Mad Max.
And indeed, I think
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, because in Ant-Man you have
Judy Greer and soon there will be a superhero is not a white man. Soon. It is. Without spoiling the... You've seen... Yeah.
The end of it.
The end of it. Yeah. Where it's like...
Easy.
We can't rush this.
We need to get ready for the idea that women might be able to do guy stuff.
We have to introduce you to the audience and wait a couple of years.
Yeah. You have to be defined in terms of your relationship to the three primary male characters first.
Yeah.
And it's talking about a film with strong female lead. Inside Out is at number one.
Hooray!
Yes. Yes.
And it has three strong female leads, which is brilliant.
It has wonderful characters all around.
Yeah. I adored it. Absolutely adored it.
Didn't we all?
Yeah. The plot's very A to B to C.
Once it gets past the initial setup, though.
When they're in the lands, it is get to this land, know this land.
And everything contrived to stop them getting to where the thing is. That's fine.
It is fine because A, the lands are well produced, and two, we're on the journey with such wonderful.
Bing Bong!
Bing Bong is the best.
God, that article about Bing Bong means Jar Jar Binks needs to be.
There's a literal train of thought. I'm sorry, any film has a literal train of thought.
At last.
Bing Bong is heartbreaking. And actually introduced to something really interesting.
D-A-N-G-E-R. Shortcut.
Yeah.
Or that bit when they mix up thoughts and
facts and opinions.
Facts and opinions. And
they're all the same to me.
They look the same.
There's déjà vu. There's déjà vu.
Yeah.
I went into the Disney store because I saw they were selling the toys. Bing Bong is candy floss scented. Go buy it.
What? That's amazing.
I've already got a strawberry scented Lotso. So
that doesn't surprise me.
My son has a strawberry
scented Lotso. He's allowed to hold
it. Nobody believes that pretense in any way, shape, or form.
He'll be allowed to hold it when he learns to be
careful. Don't take it out of the box. Yeah. It's mint condition.
But if you press your nostrils on plastic, you can practically smell it.
His two teddies or three teddies he plays with most. He has this giraffe thing, and then he also has a little Iron Man and a Baymax.
So,
none of this is surprising to anyone.
No,
Well, the draft surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah,
it was in a
sure it's
space
not a fictional
helmet.
Character.
I bet it's, I bet it's Melman from Madagascar.
It's to remind him of his dad.
Hey! You made that jump for any of us.
It's
because
he's tall.
So, Inside Out, where's the stack in Pixar?
Sixth.
Probably,
Jesus, okay.
I put it around sixth, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I might go a little tiny bit higher.
It's breaking
top. It's in the conversation.
It certainly is. That's exactly where I get it.
And that's amazing considering where we were 2 years ago. I'm probably where we're going to be with Good Dinosaur.
But
that's fine.
The trailer looks dreadful. I'll watch it with mounting horror. It's like, oh, please, don't that.
But
don't
the
be that.
It's brilliant.
As long as it's not the second best Disney dinosaur film, I will be happy.
Can we mention Lava? Anybody?
Yes.
This is the short that plays for Inside Out, and it is.
We did not
it's
Lava.
It's an abomination. It's an absolute abomination.
It's a vomitous pile of.
I was embarrassed for Pixar and all the audience I saw the film with, and myself watching it. I actually felt myself going
red. I actually think I appreciated Inside Out more.
I think so. Maybe that was their
lower end, lower expectations.
If they put Lava before the Good Dinosaur, I think a Good Dinosaur got a lot more better.
Cars 2, yeah. Cars 2, the unsung masterpiece edition.
No, the thing about Lava before the Good Dinosaur might give you the connotations of Lava erupting and destroying.
Ooh, it's all, it might have been more the Pixar shared universe.
It's horrid.
In fact, they are shared. You were telling me that.
No, Jerry turns
it just boggles the mind how a studio that grapples with emotion so frequently and so well can make such a reductive pile of smut.
They also made Brave.
It's the anthropomorphization of the female volcano.
If we want to talk about latent sexism, like the male
the
volcano,
creepy old guy.
The male volcano gets to be Jabba the volcano. The female
with
one
his
gets strong, breasts,
and he has a strangely young voice, which makes it okay.
And whatever eyes they give you, like that creepy look
he
gives to everyone.
Like 90.
Yeah,
you know?
And she has no connotation of what the world's like outside of him. Like, I want a sequel where it's like a creepy, abusive volcano relationship, and she just wants to get out.
I think by the end of that film, it's essentially that, if you want to read between the lines. Because that's where I was at.
Yeah.
Like, I want out of this relationship. This is like watching Woody Allen and Sunny.
But don't worry, it's okay, because they have a paternal relationship.
Yeah,
you read that interview, right?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Also, I'm too bourgeois to make good films.
I always go see the Woody Allen films, and I continue that. But God, I wish you wouldn't give any more interviews. Please, you're ruining it for me.
Yeah, but then again, on the plus side, I think Lava just might be the film. Yeah, that's my Woody Allen.
Except you wouldn't go see
it. It's not a bad Woody Allen.
That's okay.
So, well, no, I mean, Sun Yi wanted to see it. I said, okay, honey, you just go get yourself
I'll get
some
candy.
Yeah.
Bing bong.
Bing
bong. Okay, this is getting too creepy. Let's get out of here. Eject.
On to the new releases. So, of the new releases, because we missed last week, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which we've talked about. Right,
yes.
Then, Beyond the Reach.
Michael Douglas goes hunting lions for the second time in his
topical
career.
And yes.
Very topical.
Is
he
a dentist?
Yeah.
Is he a dentist?
Do you reckon Cecil the Lion was just a marketing ploy?
I reckon Michael Douglas killed Cecil the Lion in the previous film, and this is just he waited in the long con.
Yeah. In case anybody is wondering, I'm referring to a film called The Ghost in the Dark.
It's good.
With Val
Kilmer. I liked it.
Really? That's the first positive review I've ever heard of it. I've never seen
it,
but I've no intuition.
Stephen, somebody directed that.
Stephen Hopkins.
Yes.
Who's
also directed half of the second season of 24. That's the and Predator 2.
I like Predator 2.
And the underrated Predator.
Wait, what?
I like Predator 2.
Gary Busey is great in it. That's all I've got.
I like Predator 2. That's all.
Stephen Hopkins also directed The Reaping and the film adaptation of Lost in Space. Hear that? That's
I can't do anything
Wait,
for
what?
That.
Matt LeBlanc as an action hero. Go on. How can you not love it, people?
That was a dreadful idea. All from the get-go, that was a bad idea.
Wasn't it?
But he's in Friends.
Apollo 440. Then movies that didn't release in the UK but didn't bother with their backside coming out here.
Probably a good thing.
The Cobbler.
Adam Sandler.
He's the Cobbler.
But the director.
He's 13. We'll talk about
honestly, I will try in the next week to watch The Cobbler and hate talking about it next week.
He does this for you people. Jay does this.
I still have to watch Grey's and Monaco as well. Can I double build them?
Actually,
oh my god, there's a Saturday night from hell.
We should all, because it's on Netflix now.
Yes, it is.
So we should all, like, oh my god, this is like a movie suicide pact.
Let's do it.
We should
do it together.
Yeah, I'm in.
Who's going?
I guarantee. I guarantee
who's going hosting this movie night from hell? We'll discuss all these details later.
Right. Anyway, so they didn't bother coming out. Cub was a one night only release.
That was in the Lighthouse.
It was in the Lighthouse.
Belgian horror film.
Yeah, Jonas Gouvaert's next film is with Kevin Lehan. Kevin Hahn scripted the next film.
Oh, that's right.
Called Heads Will Roll. Then Dr. Proctor's Fart Powder also came out in the UK, but did not.
I saw 10 seconds of that trailer today. It's like, what in the absolute Christ is this? Turned it up quickly before I switched to porn so nobody would see it work.
Then,
I didn't switch to porn, obviously.
What is... I want to know what Dr. Proctor's fart powder is.
It's an ill-judged movie of the highest order.
It's an animation.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah. This will not continue animation's winning streak in the box office, I would suspect.
Okay.
It's a book by John Nesbo. I swear to God.
By Headhunters.
Yeah.
Headhunters.
Which is a dreadful film.
Headhunters?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a dreadful film.
I thought it was fine.
I thought it was nice.
You're all crazy.
You're waiting for the American Inevitable American remake.
But
people
Fincher.
Who don't like to read.
I'd watch the hell out of that. It'd
for
be the game all
like,
over
for
again.
People who don't like to read their movies.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, it's not animated. It's just a children's film.
It looked animated, actually, the 10 seconds I saw it.
I think there's animation.
There's a weird kind of thing on it.
It's, yeah,
anyway.
I don't care enough about this. It's a Norwegian film. Anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
Then Hot Pursuit came out as well, which we've already talked about in the top 10. And then Iris.
Albert Basil's last film about Iris Apfel.
Yeah.
Fashion icon.
Yeah, it seems a bit light in comparison to the previous stuff, but...
it's no Grey Gardens.
No,
sure.
Oh god, I love Grey Gardens.
That's on Ninja Eye Flight.
It's very hard to draw the line between the past and the present and keep it separate, don't you think?
on to this week. Because we know Philip is going to be good with this. Fantastic Four.
He
indeed.
May be the only
is
person
it fantastic, Philip?
It.
What do you
think?
Well,
that's because it didn't press screen.
It was on tonight, actually. I missed it.
It did press screen, but the day before the release.
Yeah, and
it was last night.
Yeah. And it was an unlimited screening last night, and then tonight there's a...
Listen,
press screening tonight.
Yeah.
Anytime you see actors talking about how critics don't give big movies good reviews, you know there's a stinker coming.
They didn't see it either. They weren't showing.
But they knew.
Well, I'll just put this in context. This is, of course, Josh Trank's attempt to revitalize this franchise after
Hollywood's third attempt at Fantastic Four.
Oh, come on, the Roger Corman film.
Have they bettered Corman? I'm not sure.
Jim's story probably didn't. I haven't seen the Corman, but. So there was a lot of bad buzz around this after apparently a lot of erratic behaviour by his director on set, studio interference, blah blah blah.
Reshoots.
Simon Kinberg produced it.
But he stepped in.
Josh Trank says no.
Josh Trank also says he liked the Boba Fett thing. Or
it's basically one of those he said, she said things. Basically, it's as you'd expect. There's the germ of a good idea here. It's an origin story, which is all origin and kind of just so what about the story.
Yeah, but Origin's New Black.
Oh.
Get out of
there. No, that's the best you've had all night. I'd say leave him there. It's not very good, I have to be honest. Its biggest crime is the biggest crime you commit in cinema. It's dull. It is deathly, deathly
wastes
dull.
Wastes a good cast, but it looks
really not only wastes a good cast, makes some of them look really bad. Miles Teller is, I think he's pretty good in things like Spectacular Now and Whiplash. He's given some dreadful dialogue. He sounds terrible.
One of the things you need to understand is Reed Richards is one of the most important characters. Reed Richards is one of the most important characters in the Marvel Universe. He is incredibly important in the Marvel Universe.
Isn't going to help.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of like the Fantastic Four, in terms of like they launched the Marvel comics.
Yeah.
In terms of they were the original one in 1961.
But him, Stark, and Banner. The three of them are the mad, crazy scientists who do stuff, and Ray Richards is the sort of responsible one.
No, he's not. He's the sociopathic one.
Yeah,
he's building in like a Guantanamo in an international spatial dimension.
As far as the film goes.
Yeah, but he'll question why.
Come on.
Nerd talk.
No, I'm with you, Jay. I mean, I'm here to talk about the film as, and
Well, listen, we have film talking about a superhero film. Come on,
encourage him.
Enjoy it.
I'm the only one of us who's seen it, so that should be
this
enough.
Is a crazy world. This
So, anyway, basic story is it's their origin story. They're scientists. They're trying to the last Fantastic Four, they went into space. Here, it's interdimensional travel, and basically amounts to the usual thing of these superhero movies: smart people doing stupid shit and getting superpowers because of.
Come on, it's more than superheroes. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Frankenstein. It's a literary trope. Like.
Well, the thing about this one is it does, briefly, there's a moment after they have their accident, about halfway through the film, there are 10 minutes, which I thought were pretty damn good, where they're finding out what's happened to them. They're being surveyed by people in biohazard suits, and they're being treated with extreme caution. And you're realizing, what?
Flame on.
Well, yeah.
It's how we take Chris Evans in
there. Yeah, it's a little bit more subtle than that. At those moments, they verge on Cronenbergian body horror. It's kind of almost tragic in its way. Great. 10 minutes of that. The rest, the first half, it's just backstory with bad child actors, and then they grow up to be a relatively good cast. Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Kate Mara. Jamie Bell, who plays Ben Grimm.
He's barely in it. The body horror experience. He has the.
Exactly.
He becomes a rock.
Yeah, but.
And not the rock.
There is a potential.
That'll be the best international travel ever.
There's a potential for his storyline to be interesting. Like except Shazam. Before he turns into the thing, he is in the film for all of 5 minutes. Some of these characters disappear for whole scenes at a time without caring.
The rock is. The thing is the foundation. Of the four, he's the one you build the story.
Well, he's
around.
The tragic one.
What a pity! The film sure doesn't seem to give much of a crap about him.
Well, the film seems to have no idea what it's doing with any of the characters in terms of like it's a dark and grim sort of look at what was a bright four colored 1961 optimistic Kennedy comic.
That's what Kennedy era comic.
Yeah, like the Incredibles. The Incredibles,
The last Fantastic Four films. They were too light. This. It is too dark. It's trying to paint a tragedy around characters that really doesn't develop well. Miles Teller is a nerd. You can tell because he wears glasses. Kate Mara is a nerdy woman because she's a woman who doesn't wear glasses, but she still has a lot of scientific talk. Michael B. Jordan is the wild card.
He's the hothead.
He's not a scientist. He races cars. Oh,
but he's a motorcycle stunt person.
And so you draft him into your interdimensional
and,
trap.
Yeah. And then, as I say, there is Jamie Bell, who really is not given enough to do. And then they become the monsters. They become the tragic characters who have suffered these after effects. And who cares?
Toby Kebbell.
He plays Victor Von Doom, aka Doctor Doom. There's potential there
who is possibly the best villain in the Marvel Universe.
But they take away the steel
thing. Apart from Magneto. Yeah.
But how do you feck him up so continuously?
Yeah, every single time.
Doom wrong. This is a guy who's so evil, he has his own country.
And refers to himself in the third person. I mean, how do you mess that up?
Sorry. You just need one good actor and let him do their thing. Yeah. You don't have to do anything, really.
Well, as for Dr. Doom in this, they try and build him up like they do the other four, and when the second half comes, overall, it's a disappointment. And
Variety called it a 100-minute advertisement for the next one.
That's pretty much sense. That's actually a pretty good description. Yeah. And I'd be wary of the second one if this is the trailer for it, because, again, characters not developed enough, and Wace, I think, is a potentially very good villain.
So it's essentially Marvel's Green Lantern, yeah? Fox is green.
I presume Trank will be off the second one.
Oh yeah, he's going nowhere fast.
The second one has been
greenlit, but we'll see what the box office.
Yeah. Isn't the rumor that they Fox because all they have is X Men and Fantastic Four?
Yeah,
it's like the peanut butter and regular butter sandwich they're making.
They're trying to put them on the same
universe.
They do have Deadpool coming as well, so.
Yeah. Which I'm kind of curious about.
But you can
that trailer is incredible.
Fantastic Four.
If you give
though,
me a suit, please don't make it green and animated.
You can smell studio interference all over Fantastic Four. They've cut it to ribbons. It's 100 minutes, which is short as these things go.
Which, for a summer blockbuster,
Jesus, that's... Where the, like, for that blockbuster, you need probably about 2 hours.
Yeah,
I think too long. That's probably too long. We're gonna and like, 110, it, 120.
But even besides the edit, you can tell it's disjointed because the first 2/3 of the film, they're aiming for something perhaps a little moodier, you know, the tragic backstory, whatever, and then turn like, shit, get a set piece in.
Yeah.
And it's not even a very good one.
So, yeah, so lots of stuff exploding. Is there a city under threat?
Funny enough, no.
Oh.
That's new.
That's, okay.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
You know what? If this is entering into spoiler territory, I don't care. yeah, not recommended. Let's move on.
So not fantastic.
No. Not as
fantastic.
Not as unfantastic as the last two Fantastics, but still not fantastic.
Okay, so it turns out fourth time is not the charm.
Indeed not.
I would go back and watch the Roger Corman version.
I actually, as a kid, I adored him. He did the Captain America one as well with Ronnie Cox.
Yeah,
didn't
that, oh god,
that was terrible, but it was terrible in a way that was great fun.
Yeah, and you were, and it was over just in time. You'd be home in time for Corman.
That's it. I was about 8 at the time, to be fair.
Next,
52's showed at the Gayest Film Festival, so we'll move on to Diary of a Teenage Girl.
This is getting a lot of controversy because of the decision by the BBFC to rate this 18s.
Yeah,
despite the fact that it's a film about sexuality aimed at teenage girls.
Apparently, it's because
people who actually like to, you know, think about sex. Would you believe?
They show there's diagrams of
drawings
of peanut. Yeah, exactly. And so
that's it. That's what gets
it. And Superbad still got a 15.
Well, that's it. As far as our censorship attitudes go, you'd imagine violence would be.
That's the BBFC. I don't think IFC actually.
They haven't done it yet. They haven't.
Well, our censorship board. Well, our classification board.
18.
Is it
18 here? Yeah.
For goodness sake.
But I mean,
I thought a good 16.
But not a 16 because we have a 16. The English don't. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. You thought this might have a
lot. Our classification board is generally quite.
Scenes of strong drug use, very strong.
Very strong sex scenes as well. So.
Surprised they didn't try to
Oh, you mean like the King's Speech version?
Take a little bit out for a slightly lower rate.
It probably wouldn't have taken a lot to get it.
That's what I wouldn't have thought. That's
a shame.
But I mean, on the other hand, convincing teenagers to go see something that you cut down from a harder cut, as far as the selling point goes.
Yeah, you may not even know what happens.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, but in this thing they would, though.
But they might want to just see the film.
Nobody,
That film, they want to see it because it's an adaptation of
the rating, but you mean, and you can submit for advice on the rating.
Yeah, they'll tell you what you need to cut to get a rating.
Yeah, exactly. There's no film cut by it.
Because it's not a censor.
We don't have censors.
No, I'm at the studio.
We can never stress that enough.
Yeah,
it's great.
Because we used to have them. That's why
it's also because every so often you see film cut for Irish audience.
It's lazy arguments there. Lazy journalism.
Yeah, it wasn't by anybody.
Nobody on our side. Yeah, nobody on our side.
It was just
it's a fair point.
No,
in this instance, they didn't. So
no, but that's getting that is getting sort of good views all the same.
So I think I'll go see a bunch of teenagers.
A young teenager getting in touch,
getting your Woody Allen on, are you?
But the idea that it's a teenage girl as opposed to a guy who's getting in touch with sexual experience. That's the thing. Women?
Kind of like a double standard.
What? Good God.
Wait, are you telling me women like sex?
This is the rumour.
Okay.
Not my experience.
Yeah. Maybe just not with you. Jay.
Yeah.
Aww. I'm adding nothing to that.
So many jokes I got that are so inappropriate. Yeah. I'm not making.
This podcast is rated PG-13.
It's 16.
So we have Manglehorn.
Oh God!
I know you're first in line for this. Al Pacino.
I'm not a huge fan of David Gordon Green as a filmmaker. I had a look through these.
You mean you're like
then
he does
his 180s into kind of stoner comedies and stuff like that.
He's recovered. Yeah. He has recovered though.
Yeah. Oh, and your
that wasn't, that wasn't, I'm not a big fan of Prince Avalanche, which is probably his best received in the last few years. George Washington was decent. That's about it. The rest I can.
Joe.
Yeah. Joe's okay.
Like Joe a lot. And
it was okay.
Prince Avalanche was quietly charming.
Yeah.
So that means that's your fill there if you're into.
If you're into Al Pacino being.
Or you like David Gordon Green sort of oeuvre or body of work, then,
yeah.
Which is I two like very neither. Distinct bodies of work, to be clear. I don't think fans of The Babysitter are going to be too excited.
Leave those aside. There's Hard to Be a God.
All two of
them. Alexei German's 3-hour epic with comparisons to Tarkovsky J.
I know. I spent 3 hours to go and see
especially.
This. The Paul Dwan has been kind of been pushing this when he saw it, and he kind of, I think he gave the IFI a bit of a push towards putting it on. So I'm hoping to see it. It looks right up my street.
It gets a lot of attention. Yeah, miserable people came.
Miserable 3 hour black and white movie. My dream sequence is this is as good as you want. Yeah, I'm hoping to try and get to see that this weekend.
Yeah, I think I may have to do the same, although we'll see.
It is on American Netflix, weirdly.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But apparently it's the big screen is where you want to be seeing it. Yeah.
Mm. Also out, The Gift.
Oh, Joel Edgerton writing. Is he directing as well?
He's writing, directing, and starring.
He did the music.
Yeah. And also made the sandwiches for the crew as well.
Probably. It's what I call the James Franco approach.
Except, is Edgerton much more... Oh, he's lower like him than Franco. Yeah.
Well, yes, although if you're not care... If you're short-sighted enough, you could mistake him for Jai Courtney on a bad day, in my opinion.
What was the...
really?
In looks, at least. But I think...
It's like a talented Jai Courtney.
There you go. That's the only
Joel
thing,
Edgerton, the talented Jay Courtney.
The problem with Joel Edgerton is he hasn't... I don't think he'd made anything particularly of note. He'd done things like The Thing remake, Warrior. I mean, fine, but getting upset
in terms of Joel Edgerton, like, the note that I have in my head next to him is Uncle Ben. He was Uncle Ben for like 30 seconds.
In what?
In Star Wars. Wasn't Joel Edgerton?
Was he?
In Star Wars?
Yeah, wasn't he the one who took the baby at the end of Revenge of the Sith? Go on, call me out, movie nerds, to the fact machine!
I'd say this is more your expertise than mine.
Yeah, me too.
But this is getting really good reviews. His debut feature... Is his debut feature? Actually, as a director.
But he's written a few... Didn't he write The Rover?
Owen, apologies. Yeah, so he's Uncle Owen, not Uncle Ben. Oh, Uncle Ben's the other uncle who dies.
He makes incredibly bad rice and something.
Also, yes.
Very bad, but...
Yeah, you're right. He did. He wrote the base story for The Rover, but this is his first feature as a director.
Yeah,
and very good reviews.
I'm quite curious.
One of those 80s throwback thrillers, adult kind of thing.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I hope it's better.
The only
than
person
guest.
Liked The Guest.
No, the whole internet likes The Guest.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't either.
It's
schlocky and
it is schlocky and
silly.
It's not nearly schlocky enough, and not nearly good enough to be schlocky.
No, it's too knowing. It just never stopped winking.
Yeah, and I just found it exhausting.
Yeah, but The Gift. Okay. I think that could be worth a look.
Yeah, I'll fit it in somehow, somewhere. Jesus,
I doubt it.
I have a lot of movies to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
There's Max, the story of U.S. Marines highly trained service dog.
Oh God, it's American Sniper.
Who was too traumatized to remain in the service after the death of his own earth. The U.S. Marine Kyle.
Like Greyfriar Kirk. American Sniper.
The director of this, Boaz Yeoken, did a film, 20 years ago, called Fresh, which is actually really good.
Not so fresh anymore.
No, he's got a chest prodigy.
He also directed Now You See Me, so,
did he?
But he what? Now you
see me.
Was that not what's his face?
Involved in?
No, okay, let's say was that not the
that was Louis
Leterrier?
He's a producer.
Yeah, okay. he was
not Now You Three Me, unfortunately.
I'm thankful for that. Just for that title alone.
No, they're not calling it Now You Three Me. It's Now You See Me Three with Roman numerals.
Now You Three Me, I kind of like.
I like Now You Three Me.
So do I.
Yeah.
He also directed the Jason Statham movie Safe.
Yep.
Oh, which one's safe? Is that the one
protecting a little girl?
Yeah,
yes.
You got your name wrong. I never delivered garbage. I disposed of it. Crack.
He's also the screenwriter on Prince of Persia.
Well, nobody to blame but himself.
Coming back around to Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And Remembered Titans.
Yeah, it's a long time since Fresh. Alas.
They're not too fresh.
No.
Yes, cool. And then there's Marshland.
Serial killer thriller.
Spanish.
Yep.
Si.
What?
I said one word. Spot
wrong.
This is supposed to be pretty good. It's kind of a 1980, I think, set, kind of just post Franco kicking the bucket.
Mm.
So it has that kind of.
The other Franco. The bad Franco.
Yeah, James.
Yeah.
And then.
I thought it was Dave.
No.
They're all bad Francos. Very bad Francos.
Last but not least, is an Irish film. It's Gary Lennon's documentary, A Doctor's Sword.
Oh. This is about a doctor who went to Japan during World War II, and he was gifted a samurai sword.
And he comes back, leaves it in the pub in Castletown Bear, and then they try to figure out, follow the story of it. So,
It's just apparently that was a kind of a very rare honour to be bestowed upon anybody, let alone a foreigner from a strange land.
So this has got animated sequences in it as well, which tell the story of the gifting of the sword. So, it's meant to be very good.
Right.
Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but I will soon.
Jay, you've got a lot of catching orders, up to do.
Oh Jesus, stop! I know I have a lot of films to see, and yet I'll end up hate watching. Grace of Monaco.
You put the Cobbler on.
Not
the
for me, Amy, and Hard to Be a God.
You got to have your priorities straight.
God, I'm actually going to come back here saying that next week. And now I'm exposing what you say. Well,
Can't wait.
Let me tell you about Grace of Monaco.
God, there's something wrong with me.
On that note,
can't disagree.
And in the eager anticipation of Jason watching.
Wait, hold on, we all made that pact.
Yeah, I heard that. There's high fives and everything.
That's a sacred bond.
Oh, no, high five for anybody.
Yeah. But we know that Jason is going to be the one who hates it most. So
that's probably
really?
True. Although I think Philip
Let's have a competition.
Oh, no, I could never out hate Jay in anything.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Try me.
Right, we leave it there for the week, lads.
Radio. Bye.